I know that growing up in Paducah, Speedy was part of the landscape. I mean,
absolutely
mundane by no stretch of the imagination, but you know, still he was just kind of there, kind of accepted.
He was one of their most famous residents, really.
Certainly, but you try to explain the situation to people that may not have been aware of it, and that's when it begins to sound a little, shall we say, odd. That you could go knock on the door at the Hammock Funeral Home and ask to see Speedy, and Miss Hammock would say, let me see if he's accepting visitors. And he usually was, and you'd go in, and there he was, this
right.
African-American man who had been, at that point, essentially mummified for well over 60 years.
Correct.
Tell us about how Speedy got there.
Well, if you read the history that's written about him in the Kentucky books and newspaper articles, he was born in Tennessee in 1875. That's correct. Mm-hmm. And he died May the 27th of 1928 in Paducah. He drowned. And the myth and legend has it that he liked to drink. He was kind of a loner. And the theory possibly is, without really proof, is he was fishing on the banks, had drank a little too much, and slipped into the river and drowned.
Hmm.
Having no relations, Mr. Hammock, who was the, I'll call him the undertaker there, I like the old school terms, took his body and basically preserved it with his process of embalming, and he experimented, quite frankly. I have his death certificate here, by the way, that mm-hmm. we pulled up, and then he was well preserved, and they never buried him until Mrs. Hammock decided it was time due to the length of the age of herself. And, you know, after all these years, she knew that she would be at some point with her age being passing, so she decided to have a funeral.
I'm curious to know why they didn't bury him initially. I mean, was it kind of a professional curiosity on Mr. Hammock's part to see how this body held up with this new treatment?
That possibly could have been some of it. I've never really given that a lot of thought. It is interesting the fact that they did legally file a death certificate, mm-hmm. which is still law in today's world. And as I say, when I've given this presentation, this is my third time giving it. I gave it to genealogy, and then I've given it to some children. Now, you talk about wide eyes and questions when you know, especially when they see the pictures, and
right.
you know, their concepts are totally different from an adult. But to understand the fact that this will never happen again in anyone's world, because if this were an indigent case today, whatever county the death would occur in, the body would probably be, after a while, not claimed. It would be either cremated or buried in a pauper section, and then the funeral home, whatever the choice that or rotation it would have in that county, they would provide those services and be paid them, you know, a minimum from the county. So, I mean, I say more than once, or I've said more than once, this will never in anyone's lifetime ever happen again.
If only because of the law.
Because of the law.
So there's just no way of knowing exactly why he kept the body around.
No.
Now, the Speedy's nickname, and it is a nickname, his full name is Charles Henry Atkins.
Correct.
But his nickname comes from what he did for a living before he passed.
Yes, he was a tobacco worker, and he was very fast at what he did, and everyone evidently liked his personality. Everything you read about him, those that knew him, and even at that service, they spoke about, you know, he was just one of those nice people, and he was kind of one of those town fixtures that everyone knew.
And I find that remarkable, being very quick at taking care of tobacco, because that can be a very dangerous
yes.
occupation.
Yes.
Just the getting it out of the ground is kind of dangerous.
Right, right.
I'm curious to know, what kind of tone was it at the service in 1994?
Well, it's very interesting. When we drove up, we parked across the street, and there was a nice little crowd out front. And when we went to the door, we were greeted as they should have. And so we went down and viewed the casket. And during that time, I was looking around to kind of see how things were set up and how they were going to do it. There was Channel 6 there, and then they were starting to get things together, and they were very organized, and then they passed out the service folders. And so we just were seated in the audience with other people, and it was a decent crowd. And so as time began, we were together in our same row, the other two gentlemen and myself, and I noticed that Mrs. Hammack kept looking back during the service. And as you can see on the program, they had normal songs and had a congregational song. The minister came down, I think, from out of town, and some of the pallbearers had known him. They were elderly gentlemen. I don't know if they're still around or not. But he did a great job, and the music was wonderful. And she kept looking back, and you just sense, being a funeral director, you know, you watch what goes on, and I'm thinking, you know, what's she looking at? And so she finally motioned for me to come down there. And so she said, are you boys undertakers? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, well, you're going to serve as honorary pallbearers. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, Mr. Bowles will tell you what to do when you get out front. So that's how I became an honorary pallbearer by default, just being at the funeral. And so the service was well done. And I do have one regret of this. An AM radio station was there and had a live feed. And when it was over, I asked, could I have a copy of the service? Well, I did not go back and get it. And I've had this story for many, many years. When asked to come up with a program at Genealogy before I became program chairman, and I just said, I have the Speedy story. And she said, well, okay. So I gave her the gist of it. And I said, well, I can probably get an audio of it. So I called down to the radio station, Paducah, and they were so nice. And they said, well, when we merged, we've sold, we've done this, all that was gone away. So it proves when you want to retain something, do it then. It's my fault. But I do have a nice set of pictures. I also have a video of Mrs. Hammack speaking to Channel 6 that day, which we do have. So I'm proud of that. But it went very, very well, and it was well attended. And like I said, if you read the program, you could follow it. But it was a nice day, and it was a good send-off for him.
Was it a mixed crowd? Was it
absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. You know, I don't see color. I see people. And I think people came. I think the African-American community supported it because it was part of their heritage and history, and the fact that Mrs. Hammack was one of the leaders of their community and the community of Paducah. It's not just their community. It is Paducah. It was a part of their history. And I think there were individuals such as myself that came just out of curiosity to see and to watch and to observe. But then I looked around, and I didn't realize at the time, but there were two individuals whom I knew. One was a Baptist minister who's now passed, and the other one is a retired professor of history from Massillon Community College. He's still living. He was there. So I know of three or four people that I know personally that were there, but they came from the historical aspect. I don't think their interest was as great as ours about the service and the body, but I just think that people came out of respect to do the right thing. Because, you know, if you look back, he was washed away the second time in the 37 flood,
right,
and reclaimed and brought back to the funeral home the second time. So it was a very interesting journey when you look at the history of this.
I noticed, trying to expand, but I personally knew about him. And I came across articles in the Chicago Tribune,
absolutely,
Seattle Times, Jet Magazine.
Yes, I have that, yes.
And I was really floored by that. I knew that it's a part of kind of Paducah's history and Paducah's culture. I didn't know how far afield the story had gotten. And these are, you know, all from 1994,
right,
when he was buried.
Right.
And these are not, you know, two-sentence blurbs. These are, you know, good-sized.
Somewhat lengthy, right.
Right. Why do you think that was?
Oh, I think it was such an oddity, and that's really kind of a crude word, but it was just an unusual situation, and like I said, legally it'll never happen again.
Yeah.
But she did the right thing by honoring him and burying him and coming to closure because of her age.
Beyond it, do you think it was just the odd factor that really kind of got this, because Speedy was on That's Incredible.
Oh, yeah, she took him on airplane rides.
Took him on airplane rides.
And probably had never ridden a plane in his entire life when he was alive. I mean, think about it.
Okay, this story I have to hear. He went on an airplane?
Yeah, she took him to a couple TV shows If you look at the history, she actually took him on a couple of Speedy has been a media celebrity, having appeared on national TV several times and been featured in newspapers. She took him to two or three things that were on TV. And if you look at the history, she wasn't a seeker of fame and fortune, but I mean she wanted this to be known, and I will absolutely honor her and everything she did and how she handled him, and because she did not, I don't think she
exploited him.
I think she was honored the fact that she and her husband had done this, and that this was a part of the Society of Paducah. This is in one of her obituaries out of the Paducah paper. Atkins' body was mummified with a secret mixture of chemicals prepared by A.Z. Hammock. Speedy's biggest claim to fame came in October 1980 when he and Velma Hammock traveled to California to appear on the television station. That's incredible. So, I mean, she did get a lot of recognition out of this. And she was a very nice lady. She was very proud of this. And I watched her on that service. The community revered her. Mm. They respected her. And, buddy, she ran it with an iron fist. I mean, there was no question that Mrs. Hammock was in charge that day.
Okay. So she put him in a casket?
No. She did not. She actually put him on the plane. And I never did really hear all the stories, but I think you'll see in some of the things that, you know, she bought a seat for him and flew with him and stayed with him as she traveled with him.
That's diligence.
Yes, I would say.
That's incredible diligence. Well, you brought up the secret method, and a lot of that sometimes can get a little obfuscated when you're talking about the unusualness of the situation is how he came to be so remarkably well preserved. I mean, we'll have pictures of Speedy Atkins on our site.
Right.
But how in the world did Mr. Hammock get him to this state? I mean, I know that the formula is effectively lost, but is there any way that within your experience as an undertaker that this can be achieved?
If you look at the history of embalming, the Egyptians had a 70-day process, and that's why we have the mummies. That's why people of wealth, when they do unearth them in the pyramids or wherever, we still have, you know, we can, you know, see them and be a part of things once they unwrap them. All that kind of went away. If you look at the history in America, during the Civil War, on either side, the North or the South, when their loved ones were killed, families with wealth or wanted to bring them home had two options. They could put them in a metal-lined container and ship them back, and that way, I'm sure, by the length of time, and if it was especially the summertime, there was no way they could see them, but they could bear them back on home ground.
Right.
Or if you had wealth, you could pay about $5,000, which was a lot of money back then, and it is a lot of money now, because embalming doesn't cost that in a normal funeral home. But you could, you know, they would ship them back by rail or by boat, but then they would pack them in ice sometimes, and if it wasn't the great distance. But then, of course, ice is not going to last forever. But arterial embalming became very prevalent and prominent during that time, and it's the same process we use now in today's world.
Do you have any pet hypotheses as to what Mr. Hammock could have done to achieve this?
Embalming fluid is a lot of formaldehyde and different chemicals for preservatives. And I would say that over the period of time with his embalming, he had created some type of fluid on his own that he used, and it went to the grave with him in 1949.
Well, I know that some people may be thinking of naturally occurring mummies that you find in arid climates.
Right, but this was not the case.
And we're not in an arid climate by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
So this is, I mean, it's all the more remarkable.
Absolutely.
Considering it's the same effect.
It was scientific beyond its time for back then, because I'm sure the only education that Mr. Hammock had was actual mortuary school, which is not anything to be ashamed of, but he did not have a college degree in chemistry. He did not have a college degree in biology. I just think that he was a very unique individual who had concepts and ideas, and this was an opportunity to test them out, and it worked.
Why do you think he never did anything, even though, I mean, he's got this proof of concept, you know, with Speedy Atkins? Why right. didn't he take it to a larger, why didn't he take it to the next level?
You know, I've thought about that because there are embalming chemical fluid companies that are still around that were around then, and I'm sure as time went on and maybe some of the salesmen that traveled the area knew about it, he may have been approached.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest, African Americans in the past were not trusting of outsiders. They were maybe not as trusting to be taken advantage of, because it's like I was at the state fair yesterday, and let's go back to a little history. There was an African American in Winchester who created the stoplight,
mm-hmm.
and he sold it, and he also created the gas mask, because I saw a 1917 100-year World War I thing. And I think his last name was Morgan. He was from Winchester. And, you know, he was taken advantage of in today's world. You know, his heirs should still be, you know, retaining money from that, but mm-hmm. it didn't happen. And that's just the only concept that I can think of, is that Mr. Hammack wanted to, that was his formula, that was his baby, so to speak, and I'm not sure that he was approached, but I would think he probably would have been with time.
Hmm. But you think he was just being guarded about it?
I think so, absolutely, absolutely. Hmm. That was his proprietary information, and I don't think it was for sale. I really don't, or we would have had it today.
And when you talk to people about this today, especially younger people who came
first
along—
First of all, they've never heard of him.
Well, exactly. They haven't.
That's what's interesting. He's a Kentuckian, and they've never heard of him.
What is their reaction typically once they get familiar with the story?
Depends on the age group. Mm-hmm. I don't show them these pictures at first. Not that they're morbid. They're certainly not. But I don't let them know, really. I kind of bait them a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and I go into the history, and I go into, like, things that we've spoken about, and then I said, well, now, would you all like to see pictures?
Hmm.
Well, they do. And you know, children today, regardless, they're pretty sharp. I mean, you know, there's good and bad and all, and especially in adults. But, I mean, I'm just impressed by the next generation of children. And their questions are right on. They're spot on. But then they're thinking. Hmm. And even Professor Atkins, who was at this service, his granddaughters came to hear me speak one time. And they're very bright, and they had unique questions. But it was 2 or 3 days later, they were still talking about the man that that I gave the presentation to. And then I'll share this. I gave this in Hopkinsville to their society, and Raymond Gamble, who's an African-American undertaker in Hopkinsville, his children were there. And, of course, being around the funeral home, they're used to, you know, seeing funerals. And they had questions at least a week later, and I'm very close to that family, and they were asking me things 2 weeks later when I went down to have a cup of coffee. So, I mean, it's something that intrigues people, but they've never heard. I mean, think about, you are great at giving the program of Alvin Barkley. Another generation or two, they're not going to know who Alvin Barkley was.
Mm.
And it's sad. You know, it's so true. We're dead, and 6 months from now, they don't know who we are, regardless of what contribution we made to society.
Hmm. What is the – is there a common question you get from kids about Speedy?
When they see the pictures, their comment is this really real? Is this Photoshopped? I mean, these kids are smart. I mean,
yeah.
This is in today's world.
Right.
And they're like, well, you know, Mr. Ray, did you Photoshop this? And I'm thinking, Photoshop? I mean, you know, I'm mm-hmm. old school. No, it's not Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
But their curiosity is so great, and they believe it. But, I mean, think about, you know, this is all new to them.
Yeah.
And we're changing society with the way funerals are held. You know, cremation is more prevalent. But I'm just saying, you know, death is a part of life and it's a part of our society. But when you think about, they're used to things being given to them that they have to question, because in today's world, not everything's real.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand that.
Right.
So that's the biggest thing is, oh, well, are these pictures real? And that's, you know, that and I find that interesting. I really do. And it's something that it is history to begin with, but the history of this, it will never occur again regardless.
I thought it was a remarkable story long ago when I saw Speedy, and it is still a remarkable story, even more so now. I think now even we're 20 years past him being buried, and almost 90 years
right.
after he passed,
right.
that we're still talking about someone who who essentially it seems as though that his main achievement in life was just being a nice guy.
And he made his mark. He really did, yeah. But it was made after his death.
We should all be so lucky.
Yes, that's true.